Boogie Oogie.
Man, one whole year. Episode 52. We've been doing 52.
You shut your mouth. No, it's not.
We've birthed this young child, this 1 year old baby into the world as co-parents.
Mm-mm-mm. No. Don't like nope. that.
Nope, don't like that. Yeah, as preteen parents, we realized we were pregnant. I'm just kidding. I figured May and 1 year of us doing this can't hardly wait was a nice guilty pleasure that nobody else gives a about.
Yeah,
that you and I quote to each other all the time. I figured it was a good one for us to land a year on.
Yeah. No, this is definitely one of those hidden gems of a movies that, well, yeah, I don't think maybe anyone, at least in later generations, even know about this film.
Yeah, I think it's definitely for 90s kids, like yeah. people who grew up in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And like, if you weren't around that time, like if you didn't know the soundtrack especially, but like a lot of the themes and stuff and like mm-hmm. the raunch style humor, it was kind of Superbad before Superbad was a thing.
Yeah.
This was the closest thing anybody had to that, and I think it was kind of like with some of the star power and like the crazy cast of this, like, you know, obviously it had some esteem, but like it wasn't one that like, you know, has the lasting staying power of Superbad or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's more of a hidden gem in the rough.
Well, it was one of those ones that was like always on TV for me.
Yeah, same. Like I feel like every time I turned on the TV, this was on.
This was one of those ones, if you were lucky enough to have HBO at the time, this was one.
Every time I hear somebody say that, I think of the line from Ocean's 11, surely he has HBO. But yeah, with You and Me, like it's quotable as hell. It's kind of the love letter to the unsung high school weirdos. Mm-hmm. It's a chance for them to have a moment to shine and feel awesome.
Yeah, it almost feels, you know, it has that Shakespeare structure going on with it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the characters kind of more represent a type of person you might have known in high school at the time, or you know, a friend you grew up with.
Or a personality trait that kind of like shone through in some people. Yeah. Also, too, one of the things I wanted to bring up, I don't know if I wrote this down or not, but there's a crazy amount of actors in this that were in 6 Feet Under. Did you ever watch that show?
I never watched it, but I remember seeing advertisements for it constantly.
Rewatching it today, I remembered that there were at least three that I knew of, but then like I definitely clocked like four or five on this last rewatch.
Well, there's a lot of like recognizable actors in this that at least came out of the 90s, I'd say.
Yeah. I just like, there's definitely like a casting director or somebody or like some kind of producer that was like connective tissue between this and 6 Feet Under, which is nuts. which one of the reason I even bring it up is one of my all time fave shows. It's great. I love that show.
I've never seen 6 Feet Under. So
definitely worth going back. I think it's like among the pantheon of great TV shows like Breaking Bad.
Okay. Ooh, that's
Dexter, that kind of stuff. I actually would personally put it above Breaking Bad, but
okay.
Into apples and oranges on that one. But yeah, how many freaking quotes do you
let's dive into on this one? Can't hardly wait.
1998, going back in time.
Yes.
I was but a wee 8-year-old lad to put a number, like actually give people my age if you're willing to do normal math.
Well, yeah, we quote this a lot.
Pretty damn regularly, especially the quotes from William Lichter.
Yes, his character. Yes, his character particularly. Although I am not nearly as smart as he is.
No, I did not invest in IBM.
I tend to identify with him the most, or at least I love his performance the most in the movie.
I know quite a few people who would relate with Kenny Fisher, though.
Oh, yeah. Kenny Fisher, too. Yes, absolutely. It, like I said, so one little thing, because I had rewatched this like a little bit ago, maybe like a week ago, so it's still fresh in my mind.
Yeah, I think you knew that we were doing this.
Well, this is one, too, that I'll put on and just watch, or just have it on in the background.
Especially because we know it so well. Like, I need movies that can just fade into the background while I'm working on
things. Yeah. So. Something that's just, it's just on there, just to be on, to drown out the silence sometimes.
And, like, I'll catch a quote or something that'll make me laugh, but for the most part, I'm ignoring it.
Here's a weird comparison. I'm just going to make this now. And then we'll get into the nitty gritty of the outline. But before I forget,
weird comparisons. I love it.
Have you ever seen the movie Identity? We talked about Identity at all a bit.
Is that the John Cusack one?
Yes.
Like, I have not seen that in years, but I did love that movie once upon a time.
It's essentially just like the big reveal is everything's happening. Spoilers here, everyone.
Yeah, watch out.
It's a murder mystery. So everyone's at a hotel, I think, or a motel or something. And all these people are getting killed off one by one. It's kind of like an Agatha Christie style plot going on. But the big reveal is that all these characters are actually just different personas in some insane guy's head or something.
If you couldn't have picked that up from the title of the movie.
Yeah. So that could, like, you know, that could rub you the wrong way, I guess. And if, like, because it comes out of nowhere. But
yeah,
I almost, not that there's that same twist in this one, but those, the characters in that have sort of, they kind of have that like almost like a stock character. This, you know, you have, character A, character B, character C. This is the identity 90s party movie or something, or like coming of age 90s kid party movie in that.
I like this weird comparison a lot.
Well, like that, you know, you have the jock character.
Yeah.
You have the
speaking
nerd.
Of which, I love the Trip McNeely scene, like, yes, so much.
Trip McNeely.
What a
name. It doesn't even sound real.
The fact that it was played by what's his name, who was the kid in Goonies, the kid in Goonies.
Yes.
Or not Goonies. Oh my God. Stand by Me. My brain. Ugh.
No, I knew what you meant.
Yeah, you're picking up what
I was there. I just chose not to. Not to say anything.
Chose not to acknowledge my stupidity.
But yeah, like, at least when you first meet all the characters, they all seem to stand out as a specific role in the film. And it's almost like these are the characters or the personas that, you know, like you as an angsty teen, or at least at the time, tend to go through in terms of, okay, who am I going to be? You know, am I the nerd? Am I the jock? Am I the hot girl of the high school? Am I the guy who constantly reminds everyone about, remember that time in seventh grade when you got kicked in the nuts? You know, that's not a detriment to the film. I just think it's interesting how
the characters... Do you remember that time I was about to talk to that beautiful girl and then you kept telling me all these asinine stories
and take it away?
Just happened. No,
it just happened. It's almost like these are specific, you know, roles that happen when you're like trying to figure out who you're going to be in life. You know, we all tend to go through phases and stuff, especially when we're growing up.
And I think thematically with this movie, like the biggest success that it has is having its thumb on that button. Like identity crises for kids in their final stages of high school. Like, I'm going to have to know who I'm going to be for the rest of my life here very quickly. So I think that that's like one of the best themes to play with in high school stories.
Yeah.
Breakfast Club does that to a great degree.
Yeah. And one thing I've just from a writing standpoint, I know I've said it many times. I'm a fan of event stories or one night story, you know, like I'm a fan of taking a story and just having it happen in, you know, a certain amount of time. This is literally the party. This is like the day of.
Well, weirdly enough, like the movie was almost originally like working titled quote unquote The Party before it was Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah. Which there is a movie called The Party with Peter Sellers.
Yeah.
From the 70s. Great
movie.
Great party movie.
Might actually be why they changed it.
Maybe. I would imagine. So at least that's when you said it, that immediately was like, I'm thinking that's probably why they had to change it. But
yeah. Yeah. Ethan Embry in this, really great. Right hot off the heels. Both he and what's her name who played Audrey in Vegas Vacation. This was, I believe, both of their next film. And they're both in it together. And it's interesting that there's like a lot of little pockets of actors that had been in things together that share no screen time together. Yeah. Or like main characters who have direct influence over each other's stories who never have any screen time with each other. Ethan Embry, who plays Preston, and Mike Dexter never share any screen time together. Yet they're like very much circling around each other's stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I find like little stuff like that about this movie to be very interesting. It's like very like chance happenstance kind of stuff that like never happens. Like,
well, and one thing too that's just making me think, there are things in this movie, especially in the beginning, that I feel like if it played today would cause controversy, just things that are said.
This movie
done.
Is dated as hell. It would not play well today, like at all.
So
I think like the core storyline would for sure.
Yeah.
Like,
but you'd have to really
the love
change
story,
it a lot.
The fatalism
if you wanted to have
and
it,
all
yeah,
that.
Take place in modern times.
Yeah. Like definitely like a lot of like the party kind of borderline date atmosphere would not go over well. I do think there's like very interesting subject matter in this one. I think
yes,
like everybody can relate to high school being a giant pile of So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of value in this one.
Or at least it was back in the day. I don't know what it's like now. I can't speak for current high school.
Most of the time I feel like 21 Jump Street. I don't get this school.
Yeah. One thing that I do like about this, and I would at least say, you know, when you're judging a character, you know, see where they end up at the end of the story.
Yeah.
Be them, especially if it's a dynamic character who's going to change. And I think what I like about this is the majority of the characters do grow in a sense. Like if you see who they are in the very beginning, they're that, you know, they're all leaning hard into their
with into one their exception, stereotypes. I would say. And that's Mike Dexter.
That's Mike Dexter. That's fair.
The only change he gets is that he like very privately tries to take care of William. But other than that, he's kind of still a piece of shit.
And then if you look at like how they've grown, and they don't, and I like too that they haven't like all made huge leaps in character, and some of them even kind of revert back a little bit to what they're more comfortable
with.
It
has a little bit of that flavor of like that portion of Wet Hot American Summer where like everything, like a totally absurd amount of is happening in a small pocket of time.
Yes.
So like this to a less comical degree, but like still in a similar arena where like it's almost absurd how much actually occurs in one night, but it's like playing to that like ridiculous high school party atmosphere where it's like supposed to be like believably realistic to a degree.
Yeah. So no, that is one thing I do enjoy about the film is that most of the characters have, even if it's like a minor insight into getting older and growing up and
well, like
entering
even
the world.
The band goes through like,
the whole arc of a band, you know, like
from like birth to breaking up, like
without ever really playing a song.
Like they keep getting to that point where they're almost gonna debut it and like they never even strum a chord. Like
nope. Yeah. Down to the t-shirt fiasco.
You're gonna wear the shirt of the band that we're playing now. You can't wear. And then like he keeps putting Don Faze on, who's in Scrubs, keeps putting on the Texas hat, and he's like sitting out of the drums already. so good. So like every little like pocketed story like that, I think like a lot of girls can relate to Jennifer Love Hewitt's storyline where like they're out of like a relationship and like it seems like every guy in the world is coming after them. So there's like some weird 90s relatability scenarios. I feel like, you know, that's every guy's kind of an asshole. So I feel like, you know, there's some relatability there.
Speak for yourself. No.
Speak for yourself, sir. But yeah, I like the fatalism aspect of this. This makes a strong case for fatalism.
Okay.
In an endearing way. Like Preston's talking, like his whole thing, his whole mantra through the course of this is that it's fate that he's meant to be with Amanda Becker.
Yeah.
Like he met her the first day. They were sharing they're the same breakfast treats.
You know, I know. I love that. It's like, so like, and we've all done that. I don't know. I've done that where like, you know, especially in high school where it's like, oh, she sat next to me and we both looked at each other or something so absurd. You're like just grasping for anything.
Yeah, grasping at the most absurd straws
like
to try
this
and rationalize this cosmic
thing.
This is the
would have been the modern day equivalent of augury, which was a thing back in ancient Rome. And like they would have someone come out and usually it meant like counting the birds. They would count how many birds they would see. And that was like their way of, it's basically an ancient eight ball, like if they send like a prayer to the gods, like, okay, should we do this or should we not, or what's going to happen? And it involved like other things too, like there was a bunch of other stuff, but it was like literally trying to look for such obscure signs to figure out what to do or what the answer was. And it was a way of translating the divine's message, and that's essentially what Preston's character is going through here with the Pop-Tart. And he's like, oh, we both had the same Pop-Tart.
Yeah. And like he takes it to such a crazy degree with the whole Barry Manilow thing.
Yes.
I love like the, you and I have said before, great comedy comes from misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene with the erotic dancer where he meets up with her and he keeps telling her that he's seen this sign with the Barry Manilow song on the radio.
Yeah.
Mandy, he thinks he's grasping at straws relating Mandy to Amanda Becker and saying that that's his sign that he needs to take action. And he tells this to a woman he's fighting over a payphone with, also dating this film harshly to the 90s, that he needs to use a payphone.
Oh my God, yeah, he's got to use a payphone, yep.
But she misunderstands and thinks that he's in love with Barry Manilow, and that's why he so desperately needs to get in touch with Barry Manilow.
get in touch with Barry Manilow.
we all have our things. And then she gives him the whole story about Scott Baio and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. But which is a pivotal moment of the film, at least for his character.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I think what's interesting is, like, having watched it again recently, I'm almost curious if if you were to redo this today, obviously cell phones and social media is going to have to be there. You just can't. And that changes a lot of things going on.
Ruins a lot of the things going on.
Yeah. Well, I feel like my guess would be that the universalities of growing up in high school, I don't think have changed maybe dramatically, or just naturally interacting with other humans. All that stuff is still there. Like, you know, the good things and the bad, especially, you know, the pettiness, the gossip, you know, the lying, the cheating, all that. I think that still would be there. It's just a matter of how it's translated or communicated to one another.
Yeah.
If you did redo this, I would be interested to see if Preston didn't get with Amanda Becker, or didn't, he did what he did, but their agreement is more kind of mutual. Like, she doesn't hate him, or like, you don't have to paint her as like or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they both come to the realization, or he comes to the realization, that he has that growing moment more. And yeah, he doesn't necessarily get with her, and he still goes and leaves for, I believe he's going for college the next day, right?
Yeah, he's leaving for, I think, like a summer internship.
Yeah.
That leads him into his college experience.
That would be a way to sort of add some more depth if you redid this for today.
Yeah.
Having said that, I still do like the fact that it ends the way it does.
Oh, yeah. It keeps it kind of like isolated to that one night, and then the epilogue is kind of like the morning after kind of situation.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
which is
yeah.
kind of cool. I do think that this has a lot to say, very interestingly, especially in that like last little epilogue moment, about the nature of relationships, like especially between Denise and Kenny, like how they mm-hmm. keep bouncing. They're already talking about breaking up and getting back together and all that stuff. But I think it has a lot of interesting things to say about just like the nature of relationships and how
yeah.
like your partner can like call you on your and make you a better person in a lot of ways you didn't expect. And mm-hmm. I think that this, especially in the dialogue and the way, like, you know, that scene, the whole sequence where Denise and Kenny are locked in the bathroom together, bouncing stuff off one another and going through their whole history together, because we find out that they were friends back to like early days in their youth. And
yeah,
we find out all these little bull callings on each other. They know how full each other are and are calling, and they're making each other better people for it, even in this yeah. pocketed, isolated
and,
moment, which is
and, cool. Yeah, no, absolutely. That is the heart of this movie. I think that is still why I feel like it still holds for the most part. Yes, there are moments that have aged and would be tough to play right now.
But if you can look past all that.
No, yeah, that universal human condition is still there. Every main character has their sort of reconciliation moment. There's a word I'm looking for and it's not coming to me, but they have that moment where they're challenged big time, like at their deepest level so far in their life. You know, Preston has it with Amanda, like, you know, especially when you have the miscommunication of him running back to her at the wrong time, and him getting just like torn a new one by her.
Well, yeah, and then like that snapback realization that she has, that she just like ripped the guy who she's actively looking for, who wrote the letter. She has no visual understanding of who Preston is.
Yeah.
And then she has this moment where she just realizes the guy she's looking for and might be interested in, she just tore him a new asshole in front of like half the school.
But yeah, every major character, even the main antagonist, I guess, if you want to call Amanda's previous boyfriend, the football player,
Mike Dexter,
thank you.
Yeah,
even he has that movie. We just mentioned it with Tripp McNeely coming back and telling him that, you know, it's different out there.
Yeah, although I would argue, not just a giant
although
orgy.
Part of me is like, sometimes when I see this, I'm like, is it though? Is it really? Like, I remember being told that you never really leave high school. Like, you leave high school, but socially, you'll always be stuck in it sometimes.
College was another shade of high school, at least in my experience, you know? I think that just goes with every stage of life. There's going to be, you know, shades of that. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, just to put a button on that note, I do like how the story does try to push the characters out of their comfort zone and confront their own hubris or their own,
as
like,
much as humanly possible within one single pocketed night.
Yeah, yeah. So that I think still does hold, and I enjoy it for that.
And there's like, it's one of those ones kind of like, you know, we talk about TV shows like Community or 30 Rock that have like crazy jokes per minute. Like counts, like this has, like, it doesn't really let you breathe with jokes. It's like every time you think you're done laughing over the previous joke, it hits you with another.
Yeah,
it's just this very quick pace with its quippiness, with making laugh. And it's like the cast too, like you're seeing like these actors that like permeated the 2000s after this movie
mm-hmm.
was popularized. Like, yeah, maybe people may not know this movie, but they definitely know almost everybody in it, I would say, at least to a degree, or you could find a point of reference that everybody would have some recognition of almost everybody in this. And like Jason Segel, who's forgetting Sarah Marshall. And
yeah, I mean, this was
his first movie ever
that he's in this until he pops back up.
He plays the A to the B, or the B to the A stoner guy mm-hmm. that's just kind of sitting there. So his whole bit about Scooby-Doo and Velma, who I thought was a cool lady, Velma from Scooby-Doo. Goes on a freaking tangent with it. I love it. Also, do you remember the exchange student?
Oh yeah,
they keep like every time they show him, he learns like another bit of English until it like culminates into a series of jokes like throughout the course of the movie.
Yeah.
It's like they tell him the Chester Cheetah thing.
Uh-huh.
And he like growls, and before you know it, like all these little elements build up to him like growling like a cheetah and asking somebody to touch his
Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, it's like the epitome of just stupid raunch humor in a lot of ways, but there isn't, like we said, there is a sweetness to it.
Yeah.
I love the whole bits with like the yearbook obsessions and people who are just like trapped in high school, because I went to, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, name names of like where I went to high school, but I went to a really like football obsessed town. Mm-hmm. And this movie resonates with me on that level, because the popular kid mantra of like weirdness of like people who are just so into high school, that like I know a lot of people who are in that town still living out like their high school mentality, and I'm like, I do not understand being still trapped there. That's so weird to me. Like,
hey, when you're in, I guess.
When you're in, you go all in, apparently.
You go all in, apparently.
But yeah, like I think that that's something that like a lot of people can resonate with, and because a lot of people have a time in high school, so this movie definitely, like when Denise sits on the couch, she's like very much not having being at this party. She even says before, when the movie first starts, that she has no interest in going to the party, but
yeah.
Preston basically drags her there.
Yeah. And that's, and there's always, like I said, there's another like sort of character part of you. If we're breaking this down as like the identity, the persona thing, there's a part of you that just doesn't want to have anything to do with the social aspect of high school or, high school or life. You're just like, no, I'm done. I'm over this place. I'm moving on. I'm you know,
as she says, Preston, we are so out of here.
Yeah.
Like they've already graduated. Like it's like, they're done. They're out.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even Preston's kind of acting like he's taking that last stab at like reaching back for something he missed out on in high school,
which is admirable in the sense of, I guess, you know, you never want to have any regrets that you like could have taken a shot and didn't. And that's not necessarily referring to asking someone out. I'm just talking in general, like anything.
Just
like,
yeah, I'm just speaking. Like, it made me think of the Anchorman quote. I'm just speaking in general.
I'm just speaking in generalities right now.
Yeah, I do kind of like whenever he says goodbye to Denise towards the end. We've seen him throughout the course of this movie as just this love-struck, heartbroken romantic who's just kind of quiet and like really just like an overly nice guy. He has this moment like where he's fully given up on the idea of Amanda Becker, and he says it would have been cool to make out with her though. And I kind of love that moment because it has this little spark of douchebag in him.
Well, yeah. And that little bit of a sense of growing, not necessarily like he was becoming a douchebag, but
it shows that he's not such a self and like self-enveloped, like,
yeah, and he's not loathing defeatist as much anymore. He's like he's starting to push past his pain, because I will say, you could argue like Preston can, like we've talked about how, if you know, writing a character, if you make him one note and you don't, and you have him hit the same note over and over and over again, kind of like how Preston does a little bit in this, and if they don't try to push past that pain or make things happen, then an audience can start to get bored with them.
Your audience is not going to get in the car with them.
Yeah.
As it were.
Now, in credit to his credit, he does do it, like actually talk to Amanda.
Yeah. He takes a chance and he puts himself out there.
And then like in that scene that you were just referencing, you can see him now trying to push past that pain that he's feeling. He's trying to grow from the experience he's just had.
Yeah. I do kind of love the scene where Amanda Becker lays out Mike Dexter and just like basically, while he's like very clearly drunk off his ass.
Yeah.
She just like eviscerates him in front of the entire school at mm-hmm. the party. And honestly, like, it's one of those moments where you just kind of wish you saw something like that actually happen in high school. So not even if it's like a personal thing, just like, honest to God, to see a person like that just get laid out.
Yeah. This definitely has those moments that you're like, you want to see happen, but it never does. So this gives you that.
Oh, yeah.
That almost fairy tale side of things happening.
Yeah. And it, like, there's like the bitterness of reality hitting Mike Dexter, like we said in the McTrip sequence. Like, college chicks are totally different, bro. Like, you're just watching these two like dudes who totally lived every bit of their life force in high school. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, they're realizing that the world doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Or does,
like, it? Not everything just, or does it? Yeah, the world just doesn't revolve around them.
Yeah.
Past those 4 years. it's kind of like a bitter taste of reality.
Yeah.
I think some people in that particular situation would benefit from hearing those words.
Yeah. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the quotes in this that we, or just some of the moments that you and I personally.
Absolute mountain of gold.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk about my first one, Kenny's introduction.
Okay.
Seth Green. Yeah.
Yeah. Seth Green.
I always want to say Seth Meyers. I'm like, that's not right. Who I think gives a great performance in this.
Oh, absolutely.
As that.
He's one of the best parts of it for me.
And he also does amazing performance in Mass Effect 2, voice performance as Joker. Anyway, off topic.
Did not know
but
that.
But I love how, so prior to that, we see William's introduction and they're like planning their revenge on Mike Dexter.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, fine, you're both kiss dolls.
Yeah, when he's but, like, you're Grand Moff Tarkin, you're Boba Fett.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they start fighting over who gets to be Boba Fett.
But I like the cut too, like the editing in this little moment is like, so they're getting the ladder and everything ready, and he's like, are there gonna be girls there? Are you kidding me? Everyone's gonna be there. There might even be people having sex tonight. And then it cuts to Seth Green's character Kenny, and he's like, yo, I got to have sex tonight. Boom, does the freeze frame, gives you that yearbook photo freeze frame that all the main characters get.
That whole to me, style too is
that
so
one
good.
Just sticks in my head still, just because I think it's so hilarious of an introduction.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're getting like two very different perspectives of like an we said that unsung like high school weirdo who just did not hit their stride, as it were, in high school. And like Kenny is like definitely on the outs of he's closer to that inner circle of the popular kids, but from like the William Lichter crowd.
Yes.
But he's definitely not somebody most people would hang out with.
But you can tell too, what I think is interesting is I've always gotten the fact, tell me what you think, in his introduction with his two other friends. I don't remember their names.
Nobody does. Don't worry about it.
No, I honestly don't believe that they are his real friends in the sense of like actual friends. He thinks they're his friends, or he wants to be like them, but really he's not. And those are two guys that he would probably be much better off maybe not being friends with.
Yeah.
They're like faux friends, I guess. Just because of the way they treat him and act and talk about them.
Yeah, well, it's like there's no growth to be had from any of those friendships.
Yeah,
they're all kind of just like circling around the same central mental points there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, William does make his way into the party. They have this whole plan to tear Mike Dexter down, and William like has never had a drink of alcohol in his life.
Yes.
He's never done anything even remotely sideways ever. And he, to try and like blend into the party and not seem like a total weirdo, he takes a sip of beer to just kind of like feel like he should be there.
He immediately spits it out
and he's like, oh my God, nobody drink the beer. The beer has gone bad.
That's and, like, one everybody we say around the constantly.
Room, like every single time. Like, and like he looks into the, everybody in the room like looks into the beer like, it tastes fine to me.
Yeah. No. I'm pretty sure if you go back through episodes, I'm sure we've said it before at some point.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, there's no way that
maybe
in 52 weeks.
If
this,
not, maybe
we
it got cut out.
Once.
But still, I know that's a quote that we tend to say a lot.
I would never cut that out. How many drunk nights have you and I probably said that?
Oh yeah, nobody drink the beer. The beer has gone bad.
There was another one that I had for that as well. Oh, he keeps getting further and further down the spiral of like being totally drunk through the night, and like he's like, they cut to him at one point on this like crazy wide angle lens, and there's like silly string being sprayed everywhere, and he's like has this inquisitive look on his face.
Yeah,
and he says, "I think there's something I'm supposed to do tonight." I can't remember, and like the party just keeps like raging harder and harder, and then he, like looks up and he's like, he like makes out with the two girls real quick, and then like he looks up and he's like, I can't feel my legs.
I have no legs.
And then the whole party jumps up and he's like turns into a total god at this party. Yeah. Which is just the most funny ass backwards thing. So good. Like just to watch like the lowest of the low dude rise to the highest points of high school in the course of like just an hour is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And totally like through no action of his own, just like literally bumbling his way through it.
Yeah. Was this one the moment when he does the beer has gone bad thing? I'm looking at it here. I'm trying to find. I was looking at a note you had found. He does something with it. Was originally supposed to be like a shot of tequila or something, or no? Or
William Lichter was supposed to take a shot of tequila, oh, yeah. But to maintain the PG-13 rating, they had to digitally replace the tequila glass with a lemon in post production.
That's just so like.
God, I got to look for that one.
That's really so good. Like weird to me how like. All these other things that we're saying, yeah, if you play, you try to show this today, it's going to get in trouble. But yeah, we can't have the tequila glass shot in there.
Nobody drink the tequila. The tequila has gone bad. That's really great. I love that one.
Yeah, that I had never known that. So that's a little tidbit there that I think you dug up.
Oh, also throughout the course of the movie, the klepto kid, like he doesn't have one line in the whole movie. He's just going through, like every time you see him, he's just in the background, like putting something in his pocket from the house and like making off with something. Like, and like the second to last time we see him at the end of the night, when the party is getting broken up by the cops, he just like gets into the cop car and drives away.
And you could end it there with him. Which I think, is that that's the second to last time we see him?
Yeah, because the next time we see him is whenever Kenny and Denise are breaking up at the end, and he just walks in and takes a gumball machine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. See, and that's a character, like, okay, he's essentially a background, he's a background character, almost, somewhat.
Yeah, I would say so.
One step more forward, but he has that role, and that's what he's there for, and it's perfect. If you're working the writing, you don't need to have too much more to reveal about him. It's just, yep, he's a kleptomaniac. He's just stealing stuff. Great. We got it.
Also, we cannot leave it unsaid. The ridiculousness of the girl who does not have a name in this movie, she is referred to in the credits merely as the girl whose party it is.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Nobody ever says her name.
Like the course of the movie, she is just like going full tilt insane because like this was supposed to be just a small get together of a few people, and it ballooned into the entire school, and like they're screwing up the house, like going into areas she like had marked off to like not go into and like destroying the bathroom, using up all the toilet paper. Somebody's walking around with a Sharpie marking up all the paintings in the house.
I would always sometimes get, because they came out around kind of the same time and were playing on TV about the same time.
Yeah.
This movie is all about the party, but I would always sometimes get it confused with the party in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
Because they have similar vibes, but that's only one scene or sequence in 10 Things I Hate About You that take place across a much broader scope of time.
Whereas this is like the entire movie.
So, but I would tend to get these two mixed up, or the parties at least, because they have that similar vibe. You know, the only difference being is that one in 10 Things I Hate About You is literally a party crashing. Bogey Lowenstein party that he's, oh, that must be Nigel with the Brie. And then in comes like all these people who he has no clue who it is.
Yeah. And like the expansiveness of this cast too, like it's like there's, like we said before, there's tons of crazy crossovers. It's like Donald Faison and Breckin Meyer were both in Clueless, a bunch of other pairings like that. Some of the people like Alicia Witt, Reese Witherspoon, and Christina Ricci were originally considered for the role of Denise. I thought especially Alicia Witt was interesting. She was the demon child in the original David Lynch telling of Dune.
Oh, okay.
She is going to be in a new movie coming out called Long Legs that I'm excited to see. Ooh, pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Jennifer Love Hewitt, Breckin Meyer, both in the 2004-2006 iterations of Garfield. This cast just seriously just like permeated the 2000s following this release. Mm-hmm. Like maybe nobody knows this movie, but like you definitely know at least a good few of the people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a funny detail. I didn't know this one.
What one?
Jennifer Love Hewitt apparently gave Ethan Embry a teddy bear full of breath mints for their climactic kissing scene.
Oh, I saw. Yeah, I was reading that. Yeah, well, because like, so apparently he was stoned the whole time for this, or he claims he doesn't even remember filming it.
That's so funny.
That like, okay.
True telling portion of the night. That was like the 90s for a lot of acting talent, I'm sure.
I also love that Breckenmeyer and his wife, who was one of the producers on this, Deborah Kaplan, fell in love on this movie, which I thought was funny.
Oh, did they really? Okay.
Yeah. I love Melissa Joan Hart as the yearbook girl. It's such like a great little cameo.
Another sort of fits that mold, that stereotype role of, oh, this is the friend who was really into the school spirit or thing, or like, oh, you got to sign my yearbook type deal.
Yeah. And she was like well known at that point for like Clarissa. She was a child star of Clarissa Explains It All on Nickelodeon. And she was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. So like she was just kind of like a high school icon at the time. So it was like a get for the show, for the movie to have her in there.
Yeah.
And like have that, just give it that authenticity to high school culture.
Oh no, yeah, she was big in the 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is what I thought was kind of interesting, because okay, so clearly this is they're in California now.
That was my understanding.
So apparently, so this movie is based loosely on Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania, and the high school community within it, where one of the directors grew up.
That's very interesting.
I don't even know where the hell Huntington Valley is in Pennsylvania, but yeah,
I've heard of it before, but I don't know if I've ever been there.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I noticed, like when people are rolling up to the party in the beginning, everyone's driving like at the time pretty nice vehicles.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, this is definitely an LA party.
Yeah. We were talking before too about the yearbook style intros, like the freeze frames.
Mm-hmm.
And I love William Lichter's, where how it just like starts scrolling in on itself on how many academic clubs he's a part of. Just shows like the dude has like zero social life whatsoever.
Oh yeah, no, he could, which I mean, he still has two other friends with him.
Oh yeah, yeah,
but yeah, it scrolls through and then he's valedictorian. You try to think like, I didn't do this, but I wonder if like you could slow it down. Does it actually say stuff, you think?
Oh, or yeah, like we have the list of it here. If you go to,
oh, you have the actual list. Oh, okay. So, yeah, oh damn, okay. He's
valedictorian, national merit scholar, Captain, state physics bowl team.
Captain, state math Olympics team. State math champion. State spelling bee champion. National Human Spirit Award.
www.com club.
large wooden club.
Klingon language club.
Anti-athletic club. I like that. That one's funny. Kite club. Bill Gates.
Like that's one of those points where you just like the production is just having a goof.
Oh,
and like,
yeah,
having fun putting details. Like you all the time, like newspapers and stuff like that are shown on screen have like the most hilarious articles. If you can freeze frame them and like read what's written there. There's just some funny.
Yeah. Oh, I love Dungeons and Dragons Club founder. Magic the Gathering Club founder.
Megabyte Club. Physics Club. Junior Harvard Club founder.
Latin Club. That's funny.
Math Olympics. Math Latin Club is really funny.
German Club, Dead Romance Languages, Perpetual Motion Award, Space Camp, Soapbox Derby Champion. Oh my gosh. How could you even have, is there even enough time? I mean, obviously it's for comedic effect, but in real life, I don't even think there would be enough time.
No,
I feel like you would have,
it like scrubs commitment past, issues. Like
this would like clash or conflict. You can't be in German Club and French Club at the same time.
Yeah, I do love that during the Trip McNally scene, like Jerry O'Connell's burp is actually real. Like he actually did that and they recorded it. It wasn't like dubbed over or anything, because it's so like horrendous. It's like it makes him look like already like a fat like trophy husband, kind of like he'd totally given up, dude. Like, yeah, I like looking back on it, it's one of those ones that's like kind of got me through high school. I watched this movie when I was 8 years old. I didn't like a lot of the humor went way over my
head. Oh, same.
When I was that young, but I think that this one's a crazy. Got a phone call. My parents are freaking out, making sure I'm coming tomorrow. Hey, also like there were like we were saying, a lot of actors that were considered for certain roles. Like James Marsden was one of the people considered for Mike Dexter. Could you imagine?
Oh, really?
How that would change
okay.
His career?
Yeah, that would change it.
Like he's like the Hollywood sweetheart. Mm-hmm. If like he played such an asshole on screen, I don't know that his career would have had the same trajectory.
Well, yeah, and we've always heard about how people can get typecast really bad.
Yeah,
in the industry.
Yeah, but look at Billy Zane.
Yeah,
he did Titanic, and then after that,
yeah, everyone was like, no,
he only had The Mummy after that.
Yeah,
yeah, crazy, like almost like absurd ensemble cast of this. Like it's mm-hmm. just like endless. What's her name? Who played Audrey in Vegas Vacation? Ends up making out with William Lichter.
Which She does?
Yeah. She's one of the two girls that like follows him off after he hops off stage.
That's the one who played Audrey in? Okay.
Yeah. She like, I don't think she's actually credited either.
Oh,
I had to
all right.
like do some digging to be sure of that.
You have to actually do the due diligence.
Yeah. And she, coincidentally enough, she like I had to do, her career is a little spotty to try and figure out early on, because I think some of the roles she did early on in her career, she doesn't have actually credited anymore, or like it's a little spotty to find out. But she was in what's the show, Riverdale? Is that it?
Yeah.
She plays one of the parents in that series, and she was in one of the Saw movies.
One
played
of
the lead detective.
All right.
In the Chris Rock Saw.
Pre-slap. I mean, so having watched it again, I know we've talked about it with would if there are some things that are dated or would not go over well today if you did it. But I do still think that deeper element is there with the characters.
Oh, absolutely. I like there's a heart, there's a sweetness to a lot. Even the Denise and Kenny story, which is kind of absurd,
there's a
sweetness to it, because they do have a genuine connection. They make each other better people, even if it's in little pocketed moments.
Yeah. Well, and two, the one thing about the characters do grow, but they grow in a more realistic way. Like, no one has, I think, a huge pivotal change necessarily in life, because how they finish it off, how they start it with like the freeze frames on the high school book when they're introducing them. I think they should have kept that in the end. Like they do with
they
don't put the
yearbook style.
Yeah, the yearbook style is what I'm saying. Like, I guess like
I think because it's kind of like it's putting the high school years behind you.
Yeah, maybe
the sentiment.
Possibly.
And it's like a look ahead kind of thing.
But yeah, you like see like everyone who like sort of tried to come outside their shell during the party. You know, you can see like they start to revert back. Mike Dexter with William is like, you know, he says, oh, we didn't have that moment, because they kind of bond and become friends for a bit at the end of it. And then he just totally goes back on it,
because he's entirely about his own personal image.
Yeah.
Like how other people perceive him is his entire identity.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of people you distance yourself from post high school.
I like to Kenny and Denise, how it's like they'll say the thing like they broke up. She broke up with him immediately thereafter, and then they got back together or something.
Yeah, that back and forth with the two of them. It's great.
But yeah, no, this I mean, this is definitely one I can throw back on and watch. I don't know if that's just, you know, if it's one that's because I saw it back in the day and that's why I keep watching it. I'd be interested to see someone, an outsider's perspective on it, who's never seen it and is just coming to it for the first time, what they would think.
I think that's exactly it, though. I think it's one of those things that just we've seen it so many times, it's embedded deep within our subconscious.
deep
that we know every line. And I think it's just one of those ones that like is kind of like a comfort movie. It just like you know every beat, you know every quote, and it's just kind of like you can put it on and ignore the hell out of it.
Yeah, no, this is definitely one of those comfort films. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that brings us up to 1 year here. This is 52 weeks of the study. I think this has been a crazy year. I just today archived our previous year worth of episodes into our backup drives, you know.
Oh,
on to another year.
We have backup drives.
Yeah, dude, I got backup drives for our backup drives. Everything's safe and sound. And then my power goes out and everything gets erased.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, we're covered, man.
All right.
I think onto brighter horizons. I'm looking forward to what the next year brings us.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody sticks around, because I got some cool stuff planned. I know Han's got some cool stuff planned.
And, I don't have anything cool planned.
He's like, what are you talking about? I thought we were just talking to each other. What's this now? You've been recording these?
You were recording these the entire time?
The whole time? The whole time? We've birthed this young child, this 1-year-old baby into the world as co-parents.
No, don't like that.